Welcome to the not new
movie review 2020.
I'm Ross Oaks.
I'm Jeremy Wainwright.
And today we made an oopsie.
Yes. Well, I want to openly and outwardly say that Zoom can eat both of our asses.
We didn't make the oopsie.
Zoom did.
Zoom made an oopsie.
So we had a wonderful guest, which you'll hear in part two and three. Well, it all seemed like one big part. So we recorded this. We had to record this. It wasn't for Zoom's meeting feature, which only gave us hour-long recordings or whatever.
Because we did not buy Zoom Premium.
Yes. So we recorded this in three separate meetings. The first meeting did not save because Zoom sucks ass. So you're going to miss our intros. You're going to miss us talking about what we've been watching. You're going to miss us introducing our wonderful guest, Sean Kelly, who told us about his upbringing, how he fell into love with movies because his mom would take him to horror movies when he was younger, how he watched Scream when he was six, and that's when he fell in love with movies and Wes Craven. A great guest. And
yeah, he was awesome.
He plugs it at the end, but just want to know, he's a horror filmmaker. His production company, which is just starting, is called Ruby Red Productions. The website, which we will link, is, I think, you are watching Ruby Red, or we are watching Ruby Red. It'll be linked in the show notes. And he's made a bunch of great horror shorts. He does great photography on his Instagram. Like, go check him out. We're going to link everything in the show notes. But he's a fantastic guest. I think the majority of our Scream conversation, which is the topic of the episode, was saved.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and I think we also need to talk. We are talking about Matthew Lillard. We are bowing down to the Lillard King. Obviously, the episode's about Scream, which has his best performance ever, in my opinion. But we get into that in the part that was actually saved. So if some things seem out of context, we reference things from earlier in the episode. Zoom made an oopsie. It's not on us. We take zero responsibilities. Ross?
Well, I mean, we have to take the responsibility.
Zero responsibility.
We could have had a better operation going here. But the next movie we cover is going to be SLC Punk.
Yes.
I saw Possessor.
Oh God, I want to see that so bad.
And I guess I don't know if there's two versions, but it said Possessor Uncut, and they mean that.
I've heard it's brutal.
It's very, very violent and has some surprising nudity in it.
Kind of like Hostel.
It's like a twisted Quantum Leap. Like very, very, very dark or like angry, violent movie. Oh,
God, I love it because if anyone doesn't know, it's from the director's Brandon Cronenberg, the son of David Cronenberg, who are awesome. I'm trying to think. You've heard of The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, right?
Oh, I've heard of it.
Yeah, have you seen it?
Yes.
Isn't that a fucked up movie?
Oh, it's great.
It's amazing though. But yeah, it's that director's son made Possessor. So you can only imagine.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like he's following in his dad's footsteps in all the right ways. God, I'm so jealous. I have to wait till November 6th to rent it. Ugh.
It was a drive-in. I saw it drive-in.
Oh, God. I still haven't been to the drive-in. I'm such a failure to cinephiles everywhere. All right, what else you got?
Well, I've just been watching like war movies. Like I watched Full Metal Jacket the other day, and I don't know. I rewatched They, which it came out like a few weeks after The Ring, but it's a Dimension movie, which means the Weinsteins are behind it, and it says it's a Wes Craven presents They, even though he has absolutely nothing to do with the movie. His name is not in the credits. He didn't produce it. So, and that was like around the time where they had him caught up in Cursed, like making him.
Oh yeah.
Like refilm it like three times. So I'm guessing that was like part of some shady business they had going on, putting his name in front of it so they can sell their movie.
Sons of bitches. When you said they, I was thinking of them, that home invasion movie, and I was But no. But so that's all you got?
Yep, pretty much.
Shall we get into it?
That's a good segue because Wes Craven, you know, rest in peace to an absolute legend. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like even he's touched you, Ross, because you probably grew up with Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like Wes Craven, he's one of, like Sean said, he was one of the first directors, like not even just horror directors, but directors that I knew the name of. Like, obviously, I knew Steven Spielberg and, like, you know, but like, I remember finding out about Wes Craven and, like, I would look up the Wikipedia plot synopsis for Last House on the Left on Wikipedia in middle school, and I would read the most disgusting parts of it to kids in school. I'd be like, and then the mom bites a guy's penis off and spits it out.
Can I just say I was not prepared for Last House on the Left when I saw it?
See, luckily I was, because I read the Wikipedia plot synopsis, but I can just imagine going into that movie blind. Ross, in case you don't know, it's Wes Craven. It's an exploitation movie he made in the 70s. And the tagline for the movie, because it was so intense, was I forget what it says, but you must repeat to yourself, it's only a movie. It's only a movie.
Is there a remake?
They did remake it. And the remake's
pretty good. I feel like I've seen the remake, unfortunately.
Wes Craven, other than the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, has a pretty good track record of his remakes not being that bad. Hills Have Eyes isn't too bad.
He wasn't involved with the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. That's why.
That's true. Yeah. See, that's your big thing.
He produced the other one.
But growing up, though, I mean, there was always the main three, you know, around Halloween time, you get the main three villains, you know, Freddy, Jason, and Mike Myers. Like Wes Craven gave us one of the big three, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, but then us, especially our generation, the Ghostface mask was everywhere.
Every Halloween.
I mean, obviously Scary Movie perpetuated it too, but like even before Scary Movie, I remember just every Halloween, there's that one variant my girlfriend and I talked about where it was like the blood would drip down. Yeah. Clear. Like every like pep rally, every like Halloween dance, there was someone with a ghost face mask.
And they had special knives too that had like blood in them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right after or right before Scream 2 came out, I remember the going to Not Scary Farm. And they had a scream room in there, and the whole maze wasn't like screen based, but you would turn a corner and you're in a movie theater and everyone in the seat is in a Ghostface mask and you don't know which one is like someone dressed up as Ghostface.
Oh, that's so that. Fucking cool.
There was people were like backing up. Like there was like a big like crowd of people there because no one wanted to go down the aisle.
That's me at horror mazes. Like I get all big and tough. It's like go in, and then like once I'm in there, I'm just like screaming. I'm like, no. The last horror maze I went to, I literally like grabbed some random girl's hand. I was like, please, I'm so scared. And actually, the last horror maze I went to was with past and future guests, video game expert of the world, your brother Colin Oakes. And I don't know if he'd appreciate me telling the story, but while we were waiting to go into the maze, he got really scared, and he made me promise him that I would, like, this is 100% serious. This was not a joke. He's like, you're going to buy me new pants, right? And I'm like, why? He's like, because I'm going to shit my pants. I have to shit. But, yeah, no, Scream. Well, like, just
now, while we're on the subject of past and future guests, yeah. I did ask our resident horror expert, Justin Tremblay, to come on
from our Happy Death Day 1 and 2 episodes.
Right. And he said, he texted me back and he said, I cannot, even though I love Scream, I cannot do the Scream episode, especially if it's about Matthew Lillard, because I met him and it was not a great experience.
Oh no.
I know. So that's why he's not here right now.
What were you going to say, Sean?
Oh, one of the UK posters of Scream is just a pair of underwear, and it says, remember to bring a spare pair. I love those.
God, I love that stuff so much.
So Scream.
Scream.
Directed by Wes Craven. Written by Kevin Williamson. His first movie written, according to his IMDb page.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, I listened to an interview with him on the Shockwave podcast recently, and which, Sean, you probably listened to it too, and it was, like, it's literally, like, his first big break. Like, it was just, like, the script got passed around forever, and then Wes Craven is like, oh, it's like, I'd like to make your movie.
Well, he didn't want to, Wes Craven did not want to do this movie at first. They had to come back to him, because I guess he wanted to do, like, that, what's that movie with Meryl Streep? Like, that movie.
Oh, yeah, Music of the Heart, or, like, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think he did do that, actually. Hold on.
Yeah, he did. But he said, some kid said, when are you going to make a kick-ass movie again?
I remember that. He's like, your movie, you're such a pussy now. And he's like, oh, geez, I gotta say, which that's one of the things, another thing I love about Wes Craven is he literally looks like this kind old man, which he was a kind old man, but then he just makes these, like, horrific movies, and he used to direct porn. Like, I just the multitudes inside him.
He was a porn director?
I mean, that's one of the ways he got started out.
The Fireworks Woman and Hot Cookies or something?
Wow.
Got to do them as bonus episodes.
Yeah, I guess so.
Not a new movie review after dark.
This has a estimated budget of $14 million. Opening weekend, 6.3. But this was back in the 90s. I mean,
that was a big opening. Like,
no, it wasn't. It's kind of like Insidious, how like Insidious, it was fine, but like Insidious never went, it didn't open massive, but
it didn't do The Conjuring.
It kept steady, so it never went down or up, so it just, it accrued a lot of money. Like, it was a slow success.
Yeah, I mean, worldwide gross, $173 million.
Yeah.
And obviously a critical success, too. I mean, everyone loves this movie.
Yeah. They re-released it even, like, after it got, like, when it first came out, it was, like, buzz. They thought this movie was going to be, like, dead on arrival. And then it started getting buzz, and people started to go see it more and more.
Released December 20th, 1996. So
this is why we have you on, because you're the expert.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I'm older than Scream.
Well, good for you. Wait, did Scream come out before? Oh, it did. Okay, because you're older then. I was going to say, because you're a young boy.
Yeah, but 96, though.
Yeah.
Good year for movies.
It was a good year for movies. What else came out in 96?
I don't know. Jurassic Park.
That's Jurassic 1993.
The Craft came out the same year, and it has Neve Campbell and Skeet Ulrich in it.
Yes. I was just the other night, I was talking to my girlfriend about it, because just to lay it out, like, as Sean and I also talked about this, the thing with Scream is that after it came out, every horror movie wanted to be Scream so bad that, like, it was like this tidal wave of, which is not Scream's fault, of just, like, everybody knows they're in a horror movie, everybody's, like, talking like, you know, they've watched every movie imaginable. Like, and it just, like, over, and it's like, so by the time my girlfriend finally watched it, but she's a big horror fan, she was like, I think this movie's kind of annoying, because, like, I've seen every movie that does this, like that's come after it. And she's like, it's not a bad movie, it's just, like, this dialogue just kind of grating to me, because I live in, like, a world where, like, every nerd on the internet talks like this.
Yeah.
Which is, it's not Scream's fault. And she admitted that. She's like, I feel bad that I don't like this movie and I want to watch the sequels. But, like literally the whole time, she's like, why are you talking like that? Like, when, like, Billy's, like, quoting, like, Silence of the Lambs and stuff like that.
I have, like, I don't know if I want to go into it right now, but, like, a thing about Billy and Stu sort of. It's kind of addressed in the movie, because, like, at one point, Sidney is like, this is real life. It isn't a movie. And he's like, it's all one great big movie. And I think about, like, how there's two killers, so they must have, like, created this alternate, or, like, this world in their heads. and there's no one else to tell them what they're thinking about isn't okay. So like they're like reassuring right. each other about like they're kind of they're creating this movie that they're enacting in real life, and they're reassuring each other. So there's not like a moment, I guess, to for them to get out of that.
There's nobody to like bring them back down to reality and be like, you guys are fucking nuts. Which like it also like another reading that I've heard is that like they're actually like great examples of toxic fandom in a way of just like people who like buy so much into things that they like that they like let their entire personalities become absorbed around that. And obviously these two liked movies and like weird shit.
Yeah, like Randy's always like he's a movie fan, but Skeet Ulrich, Billy's character talks about movies just as much as him. Like every time he's on screen, he's like referencing a movie. And
same with Stu.
And yeah, with their motive, they're like it's all they're in that world. That's what they're about. So I guess it makes sense that they're friends with Randy, even though like he's treated like the annoying one that talks about movies all the time. But they're talking about movies all the time too.
Yeah, I mean, you could really just replace Ghostface with Anakin Skywalker, and there you have Star Wars fans, you know.
Oh yeah, oh, when it comes to Stewin, yeah, yeah. And another thing, speaking of Randy being the annoying one, the whole time my girlfriend was like, "I'm pretty sure Billy's a killer, but I know Randy is the killer because he just seems like the obvious one," which is such a great misdirect. Like even when he got shot, my girlfriend was like, "He's gonna stand up." He's going to stand up and he's one of them. He does stand up eventually, but
I think it's a good misdirect when he gets fake killed, when Billy gets fake killed, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
There's a moment right before that I've always wondered about where she's talking about how it would be funny if he called her to throw her off of being the killer. And he's like, what do I have to do to prove to you that I'm not the killer? And she looks at him and she's like, oh my God. But that's before she saw that Ghostface was coming up to him. So like, what was she thinking in that moment?
Right.
Was she thinking like he is the killer? Like there's something here that makes me think like, cause she says, oh my God, when she's looking at him, then she sees Ghostface coming up and she says, oh my God again.
I love that scene. Yeah.
I feel like in that moment she might have been like, "Holy shit! Like, could be you?" But then obviously, like, Stu comes up the stairs and throws her off. Which, like,
I love how like the ghost faces are their personalities when they're in ghost and whoever's the killer like takes on their personalities, because like I feel like Stu's like more clumsy. Because like there's a scene that cracks me up every time where. Right after he fake stabs Billy, and they're running through the house, and she just like fucking annihilates him with that door.
Right. Yeah.
Also in the garage, like he literally like.
Oh, Tatum was like.
Gosh, giving him the fucking business. Which is the thing I appreciate is that like even before you know who the killers are, you can tell that this guy is not like he's no Michael Myers, he's no Jason. Like he's just this goofy ass dude in a scary mask, like stabbing people.
I guess I've never noticed it, but when there's a Ghostface incident, does Wes Craven or does the script do anything that indicates that like Stu or Billy leave the room?
What do you say that again?
So when Ghostface is killing someone, is there any like indication that like Stu or Billy left the room
in the script
or like in the movie? You know,
well there's never a time where they're both on screen and someone else is getting like killed by Ghostface. Like they're it makes sense to me. I think it makes sense if you watch it that. Either one of them is somewhere else.
Or like when there's a Ghostface incident happening or just happened, a thing that I noticed a lot is like, I don't know if it's them switching out or if like to like cover their asses, one of them like switches out real quick. Is like it happens a couple times with Billy for sure. And I think once or twice with Stu is they'll show up out of breath. I noticed that a couple times, like especially Billy when he, right after the first I think it's right after the first Ghostface incident.
When he comes through the window?
Yeah, like, I feel like he's maybe it's not. There's one time where Billy shows up right after Ghostface appeared, and he seems like really out of, like, he just like got done doing something. I'm just wondering if like there's some times where it's insinuated that they like were Ghostface, and then they quickly were like, "You see that shit? There's a guy out there! Oh my god!"
Oh yeah.
Also, Billy's shitty. Like, if you think about everything that went on, okay, it's a small town, and her mom, Sydney's mom, gets killed. It was a really quick trial because a year later, it's already has been done with.
Wrap but it like, up.
but they like kill her mom, and then like, see all that shit she's gone through, and then he's like pressuring her to have sex with him.
Yeah,
and he's like, he's like, why are you still on about your dead mom? Like, why is that still bothering you?
Guy is such a terrible person.
But okay, so if we break it down, I mean, so watching this like today, still like 24, almost 25 years, like after it came out, and it's still so refreshing, though.
I think it feels real to like, certain like court cases are like how the media reacts to certain things. There's always like a presence of the media in that town after it happens, and they're very insensitive. like what's her name, from The Exorcist, she's like, how does it feel to almost be brutally butchered?
oh yeah
And then like the only black face in the movie, she's like, Casey Becker and Stephen Orth have always already lost their lives. Who's next? Like, she's excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, this, it just goes to, like, not just media, but just, like, a thing that I love about, like, stuff like Twin Peaks is just small towns are so, like, anything happens, especially something exciting like a murder. Not that murder is exciting. Well, I guess it is in a way. Like, they latch onto it and they're just like, oh, this is such a good story. That was like, they don't want it to end. Like,
and then like the constant, you're in that small town and you're hearing about it all the time on the news. I guess you kind of become like desensitized to it a little bit, because they don't, like, a lot of the teens, they're like joking about, they're like a joke, like joking about it, and doesn't,
yeah,
I guess it doesn't feel real.
Yeah, they don't even get that. They don't even seem that upset that like their classmates are getting murdered. They're like, oh, sweet, we get to go home from school
early? Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Comparing this movie to like Halloween, is it because it's more grounded or more self-aware that brings this different kind of life to it?
Well, I think, the thing about Halloween is that was, like, one of the first slasher movies. Like, especially, obviously, they're both similar in that they're set in small towns, but, like, and I feel like, well, I think that's the magic of Scream, is that you're dealing with characters. Like, to put it as simply as possible, they know they're in a horror movie. Like, whereas, like, a lot of the other classic horror movies, like, they predispose that, like, they're imagining things, or, like, you know, when they hear a noise, like, they're like, oh, whatever. Like,
I love the part at the party where, what was his name?
Randy?
Yeah, where he's watching the movie and he's saying, watching, like, turn around, and he's right behind him. Yeah. Like, and then
his name is Jamie, too, the actor.
Oh, yeah, Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah.
They're talking about Jamie Lee Curtis and how much they love her big boobs. But no, like, just watching Halloween, it was really, like, recently, it's like, it just shows how brilliant Scream is, because you watch the teens in Halloween who, like I said, like, think about the teens in Scream, they know they're almost, like, too cool to care about the fact
they have this kind of, like, blissful ignorance about what's going on.
Which says a lot about the 90s, too, because in the 90s we were so, like, you know, Bill Clinton's playing sax on the White House lawn, like, everything's fine. Ooh, who cares about anything? Like, oh, my friend got murdered, it's not going to happen to me. Whatever, you know?
It feels real. Like, I would say they're aware of horror movies and the tropes from horror movies, but I wouldn't say they're exactly knowing that they're in one, because they talk about all these dumb things that happen in horror movies, but when they're in that moment, they kind of do the same things.
That is true. Right. It almost like shows that the cycle, like, it's almost like a fuck you to the people who are like, if I was in that moment, I would survive. It's like, well, here's people who think that they're fucking smart enough to survive these things, and they're still getting trapped in garage doors, and they're still getting like their throats slit. Like,
yeah, I think one of the plot devices that I love the most is like one of the best things is the camera that they set up in the house that's on a 30-second delay.
Oh, that is great.
And the only outcome of that, like the only reason that that's set up is that the camera guy gets killed. Like, it just sets up his kill. It's great.
Well, it's so good.
I watched this yesterday on VHS, which is the first time I watched that VHS in so long, but it's the only way. The VHS and the Laserdisc are the only way to see the uncut version of it. And it kind of made me mad because it's better. There's not a lot cut out of it, but it's stuff that matters. Like the opening scene, he's talking about like the first moment you get in the movie where this guy's like messed up. He's like, I want to see what your insides look like. And then when her boyfriend gets killed, you hear it in the R-rated cut, but you don't see it. But in the uncut version, you see his guts like spill out on the gun.
I watched it on VHS too, and I actually saw the guts, and I can actually remember it. So I must have seen the uncut version because my girlfriend and I watched it on VHS, and I remember being like, holy shit, I do not remember it being this violent.
Yeah. I watched it on Blu-ray, and I did see guts spilling out.
You see the end. You see like the after. You see it. He's already dead.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
You don't see like you see his guts spill out, and then you see him like die.
But now that you mention that, I kind of do remember that as a kid.
And then the end where she's like hanging there, it's all like cut up and like flashes and stuff, but it's like more of a steady push in the uncut version, and. It takes like a lot of the impact out of that scene because it's really fucked up. Like what they do, like hear her parents on the phone, hearing her get stabbed to death, it's like really messed up.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's talk about that opening scene.
Well, I was talking to Sean and our friend Sarah about it. Like the thing that makes this movie brilliant, the reason that like I think only Wes Craven should make Scream movies is that this movie. The whole movie's great, hinges so much on that opening scene and the reveal of the killers.
Yeah.
Like if either of those scenes only don't work by like in the slightest, the whole movie will feel off. Yeah. Like that opening scene just sets up how it just sets up this level of intensity and just this feeling that like you don't know who who the main character is. Cause like obviously at the time it was like, oh, Drew Barrymore, like he's the most famous person in this fucking movie, you know?
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, that's what makes it so great is like, it's a short film in itself.
Yeah.
And it sets up the rules for something bigger, like in 10 minutes. And the fact that Drew Barrymore, like one of the biggest actresses at the time, everyone like I'm sure, like, I can't imagine going into the theater, seeing Drew Barrymore in the beginning and she's gone within 10 minutes. And you're like, okay, this is what this is.
I mean, it's an even better version of the Psycho thing.
She's great too in the opening.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean, tell me if I'm wrong, but wasn't she offered another role and she chose to do the opening?
They offered her Sydney.
Yeah, I thought so.
They also offered it to she's in Election, Reese Witherspoon, and she was like, nope.
Oh, damn.
Oh, wow.
And Breckenmeyer was supposed to be Randy. It was really close between them. Like, they could not decide between Breckenmeyer and Randy.
God, that would have been...
I mean, Breckenmeyer and Jamie Kennedy.
Oh, that would have been interesting. Breckenmeyer definitely is good at being annoying, but I feel like Jamie Kennedy is that perfect, like, just like, you're just like, okay, Randy. But we're also, all of us are Randy, I think, at times. Yeah. we're like, we just want to go off about the things we love so much, and people are like, all right, oh, whatever. Yeah. Shut up. Like, Ross just goes off about Ratatouille like twice a day.
Love Ratatouille.
Do you think Remy the rat from Ratatouille has seen Scream?
I don't know. Is Scream big in the French market? I don't know. That's not for me to say.
I feel like in October he has like spooky themed dishes at the restaurant, and one of
I have to imagine him working at a 5-star. I don't know. Do they must do Michelin stars over there. He works at a 5-star restaurant in France. So yeah, I assume he does spooky dishes, ghost shaped potatoes.
He does a lamb chop cut in the shape of the bloody knife, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So we're here today to talk about, we obviously talk about Scream, but also who I think, to me, like, not even just because he's the topic of this conversation, is my favorite performance in this movie is Matthew Lillard.
I mean,
because like,
yeah, I really like, I think Courtney Cox does a great job though too.
Oh, they're all great. Like, I feel like across the board, everybody's great in this movie. But just that final scene alone is like on like a cosmic level. Like, just,
well, I want to talk about him in the 90% of the movie leading up to that, because it's two different performances.
Well, can I ask a question? The first time, I don't know. It's probably hard because I feel like we were all really young when we watched this movie. But if you can remember, or even like when you're watching it now, do you think Stu seems suspicious at all throughout the movie?
Watching it now, yes.
Yeah, definitely now.
Yeah. Because, like, I mean, from the first time that we see him, I think is when they're outside the school and they're talking about the Drew Barrymore killing. And he's like, and he's, you know, he's just joking about it. Like, obviously, yeah. It's, you know, he doesn't care at all.
There's a moment in where Sydney's like, how do you gut someone? And then you see they get reaction shots of everybody. So I think it was intentional. Like, and everyone sort of has like, oh shit. And then like, she's thinking about her mom or something like that. And then Stu makes like a joke of it. And he starts explaining it. And then they're,
he says something dumb, like a fish or something like that.
He starts explaining how you gut someone.
Yeah.
But it's very, they kind of give it away in that scene, because he's like, something about nobody said you did. He's like, who said I'm the killer? He's like, nobody said you did. Billy says that to Stu. So he's I guess he like backed out of, I guess he had to kill Casey by himself. Or he's like saying, you didn't kill her, I did.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
You go back and watch, they're like talking, they're talking directly about killing Casey, and nobody like knows.
Picks up, oh God. But just like, he's so like, I mean, his performance throughout the whole movie is great, but just that fun, just, I mean, two of my favorite lines in any movie is first, like, I'm getting queasy here, after he's been stabbed in the stomach, just his delivery. Man.
Like, why'd you hit me with the phone, dick?
And then just
the
best line, my favorite line in the whole movie, is just like, my mom and dad are going to be so mad.
Well, I think after the reveal, like, Matthew Lillard, I think he was at a 7 this whole movie, and then he just turns it on to a 10 when the reveal goes on. I mean, it's this totally not different performance, but it's like so amped up. And I mean, it's almost, I would say it's almost supporting actor Oscar worthy.
Oh yeah.
I've heard him talk about that. He was like, I don't know why they let me do that. I don't know why they let me go up there.
Oh, it's so good. Just like, he's like literally like, Skeet Ulrich is Bill. Like, he's hamming it up too. Like, he's going for it, but just like,
he's got these weird, like, Johnny Depp vibes throughout the whole movie though.
There was a ad lib from Jamie Kennedy I saw in like a outtake, and it's when he's like, what's Leatherface doing here, when he walks into the party, and he's like, what's Johnny Depp's brother doing here? So like, it, and then like there's nods to Elm Street also in the movie.
Oh, yeah, well, there's the obvious one of Wes Craven as the janitor
and Tatum wearing the jersey, like the the cutoff jersey with the tan on it.
Wow, I didn't even notice.
God. Yeah, just Matthew Lillard, just like, this is like, this in school, like, whenever, obviously I'm forced to think of him as Shaggy now, but like, when I think of any movie other than like the Scooby-Doo movies, I always think of Scream, just because, like, God, he's so fucking good in this movie.
Well, I mean, are you go, Sean?
I think if you think about it, I feel like his character is like more creepy than Billy. It's like, at least Billy can make up some shitty motive, but like, what reason does Stu have to kill him?
Stu is just doing it to do it.
Yeah, and I don't think he's like I guess you could get the feeling that Billy's like the head. He's like the one driving it, but I don't think that's necessarily true, because they like the way they talk about their ideas. He's like right along with him in that finale.
I feel like probably what happened is, like, I feel like Billy was the one to like kind of bring up the, like, be like, oh man, you know, I'm so fucking pissed about this. Like, I want to do something about it. And I feel like Stu is just kind of like the sidekick that's like, yeah, man, you should really do something about it. We should do something about it. Like, what if we fucking murdered people? And Billy's like, yeah, that could be cool. He's like, yeah, let's fucking gut him. Let's murder him. Let's do it. Like, Stu is like the like most sadistic cheerleader to have on your side ever.
And his motive is like, Sid's mom slept with his dad, and that's why his mom like left. But what about your dad? Your dad's like, he's the one married to your mom. Like, why would you?
Yeah, why not just sit down and go to family therapy with him? You fucking psycho! God, God, this movie. And then, of course, I feel like we have to. I don't know. We have to just at least briefly mention just like Scary Movie happened after this movie. And like, I feel right. Like in a way, like, you could, Sean, what are your feelings on Scary Movie?
That a lot of, whenever I talk about Scream, a lot of people bring up Scary Movie, or they're like, they saw Scream after they saw Scary Movie and it ruined it for them.
Yeah. I
don't hate Scary Movie. I like, it's funny, but it sucks that some of like the strength of this movie is taken away when people see Scary Movie first.
Yeah, well, it's almost like a shot for shot that they do it. So it's like, it's so easy to confuse the two in my head.
Yeah, no, but yeah, it's one of those things where I love Scary Movie, but also like I feel the same way where it's like, if you show someone a picture of Ghostface, there's a 50-50 chance that they'll either say, oh, it's from that one, that funny movie with Damon Wayans in it, you know, or like, oh, that movie, that funny movie where he goes, what's up, you know? And then there's a 50% chance to be like, oh, that movie, that Scream, the movie's fucking terrifying.
It's funny to me that the what's up thing, people know it from Scary Movie, but Scary Movie got it from those commercials that nobody remembers from the 90s.
Like a Super Bowl commercial, right?
Yeah, what's up?
But I'd like to do our other horror resident, Justin Tremblay, when he talks about Scream, because I think it's like one of his favorite movies. When he talks about it, I purposefully bring up stuff from Scary Movie
just to annoy him.
Just to mess with him.
That does sound like a good bit.
Like, there's a part where in Scary Movie, where she throws a piano down the stairs at him. I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, Scary Movie is funny. But it's
a part where, in the beginning, when he stabs her in the chest, he pulls out a fake boob. I mean,
it's good stuff. I mean, just what a great movie. Just like, just.
I really like Dewey and. Dewey and
Gail's
like chemistry in this movie.
I mean, well, they ended up getting married because of it. So,
yeah. Well, she's just like a manipulator, though, right? I mean,
yeah. I love like that. You have actual like character development from through all of them with those. Well, the first three with those characters, because in part two they address how like how she kind of like used him. and wrote about it in her book. And I think like David Arquette isn't like known as like the best actor, but I think he does a really good job, like in contrast with one and two, like his character.
Oh yeah, I think Dewey is probably my favorite character. Like Matthew Lillard gives my favorite performance, but like I just love Dewey so much. Just the goofy cop.
He's like the heart of the series. One more Matthew Lillard thing first.
Oh, of course.
If you watch that video store scene again, he's totally covering for Billy, like desperately trying to cover for Billy because Randy's onto him. And like just rewatch like that conversation, and like at every step he has like an excuse for Billy, and it's really funny. Like, I guess I wonder how you would like direct that, because when you first see it, it has to be something different than when you watch it again, which is really interesting.
Well, I think this is such a good movie for, like, this movie holds up on rewatches, like, every time. Because, like you said, every time you watch it, even if you've seen it, like, 10, like, 15 times, like, you notice little character inflections or little moments. You're like, because it's such a tight script.
Yeah.
Full of so many things like that. And the characters are so well written. Like, every time you watch it, you notice, especially knowing who the killers are, you notice little things like, you've brought up like a couple where like, oh, it was kind of obvious like the entire time that Stu was a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
So the first time you watch it, you have different expectations.
In the uncut version, the VHS one, I noticed that so when Stu was trying to get a party going at his house and Tatum and Sydney agree to it and they're walking away, he does like a little fist thing, like yes, like that sort of thing. They cut that out of the director's cut or the uncut version. I wonder if they thought that made him a little too suspicious.
Oh yeah,
because it's not in there. It's in the R-rated cut though. And one thing I wanted to talk about was like Wes Craven has this thing that he does sometimes in his movies where there'll be like, oh, someone's like getting chased or being pursued or getting killed or something, and it's like loud, and then they die, and then it's just silent. And he'll like stay on that moment for like a few seconds before cutting to the next scene. And I think that's very effective. Like in the one I focused on in this one is Tatum's
death. The way she just kind of dangles there for a second.
She says mom before her hands get crushed, which is really sad.
Right.
And then, so like, she's just like dangling there and it was like really loud and then it's like quiet and you just hear her, like the creak of her like hanging there, and he like slinks out of the party. I mean, slinks back into the house.
Yeah, he uses those techniques a lot actually. Like in, I think the movie he did before Scream 4 was My Soul to Take.
Mm-hmm.
And it was starring the same, Jeremy, remember the older brother in the pacifier?
Oh
Max,
yeah.
Max, it was, something. Max
Hero or something.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I forgot that was him.
Yeah. So he was in that. And I own that movie too. I haven't watched it in a long time, but I remember it being good, and he did that same kind of technique in that movie too.
I listened to the commentary for that, and he was pointing out how like there was a break in shooting or they had to do reshoots, and how that lead actor was like kind of small, and when they did the reshoots he was like all buff, and it was but they didn't shoot in order, so like in some scenes he's like bigger than in the other thing.
It's amazing.
I gotta watch that.
I kind of want to watch that. Like I watched a video on it the other day, and I think the killer looks legitimately terrifying in that movie. Like
there's this one scene where, I forget who it is. It might be the killer. They dress up like a condor. It's like kind of show and tell.
That's the class.
Yeah, I think just speaking of what Sean said, I think Wes Craven, I've noticed John Carpenter does that too, like rewatching Halloween, like when someone dies, like they just show it. I think it's such a good technique. Like, I feel like these older, like at the time they weren't older, but just like more classically taught horror directors, that like directors that became genre directors, they know how to show the impacts of violence, I think. I think Wes Craven especially, and I've noticed it in like with some John Carpenter movies, like, you know, like when you see someone get killed in a movie, obviously you can show it, like you can show their head get chopped off and someone sets them on fire, but like having to sit with the fact that this person was just brutally eviscerated for like even a couple seconds has so much more staying power, like you said, than just like cutting their head off and like showing the blood spurt and cutting away.
And Tina's death in A Nightmare on Elm Street, how it's so loud and she's screaming and they're like reaching out for each other and then she just hits the bed. And it's like dead silent. God. Like I've noticed that in his movie, like watching his movies in theaters, or like I noticed like in a lot of horror movies, when someone dies, the audience is cheering and like clapping and like reacting to it. But like I've seen Nightmare on Elm Street in theaters a lot of times, and every time that Tina's death happens, the audience is like dead silent. Same for like a Scream, that Tatum after like that, and sitting through the Elm Street marathon in theaters, it's like
so jealous.
Part one and part three, the audience is on the side of the characters. They're rooting for the characters. They hate Freddy, and then the other ones, they're kind of rooting. He becomes like the hero, and the audience is like more rooting for him, which is interesting.
Just speaking of horror franchises, completely off topic for a second, I'm gonna steal into your house and murder you to steal your Friday the 13th box set, by the way. I just want it so bad. But
everyone's posting their.
I know. Will you guys like team up to buy it for me, Ross?
What's this? What?
The Friday the 13th box set, will you buy it for me?
Oh, you want like a Christmas gift?
Yeah, it's only $130 on Amazon.
Whoa.
But anyways, no, Wes Craven, like, obviously we're here to talk about Screaming like Matthew Lillard, but just Wes Craven, what like I miss that man so much. Like, he's just so good. Like, what an impact on like just movies in general, not even just horror, but also horror, but just also like.
God,
I miss him.
You Lillard, but how do you guys feel about this Scream series overall? Just curious.
Well, I'll go first real quick. I love Scream. I need to rewatch it, but I'm pretty sure I love Scream 2. Scream 3, last time I watched it, I had zero use for, but that was right before Scream 4 came out. I marathoned them. And then Scream 4, I really like. Like, I saw it. I haven't seen it since theaters, but I remember walking out being like, that fucking ruled. Ross, have you seen them all?
Yeah, I kind of apply your Scream 3 decision to Scream 2 as well.
You don't like Scream 2?
No, I think Scream is great. You know, it's like a masterclass in kind of this genre. I think a lot of the acting is really hammy, though. I mean, obviously it wouldn't be this hammy today, but it works. And then I think 2 and 3 almost get too self-aware. Like they break the fourth wall a little too much for me. And then Scream 4 brings it back. I really like Scream 4.
Scream 4 does rule. And Sean, you love them all, right?
Yeah, to varying degrees. Yeah. I have a lot to say about all of them, though. But
what's your ranking?
I have to rewatch Scream 4 because I haven't seen that in a while. But I remember watching 1, 2, 3 in theaters, but they didn't play Part 4. And I came home to watch Scream 4, and for some reason I was not in the mood, so I turned it off. I'm scared to rewatch Scream 4. Actually, I had like a bad feeling. Last time I started that movie. But
like Wes Craven came back to it, so it has that level of
there. I love the movie, but I don't know. I just wasn't in the right mind to watch it then. But I really like throughout the whole thing. I just like the even like just little things you can add to a movie to enrich the characters. adds to the suspense of the movie, or like you caring about the characters helps make the movie scarier. And I think the series does that really well. I love Gale Weathers in part two. Just seeing the contrast of her at the end of the first movie and the second movie is so cool to see. And there's like a moment in that movie where like she kind of, she's seen like this awful murder that's happened, and she's done with like the story, trying to get the story. She just wants to catch the killer. And I like her turn. And I think her best, I think that character's at her best in Scream 2. And I'm excited to
watch the rest, rewatch the rest of them.
Yeah. I like the series as a whole a lot.
Yeah, and then how about real quick, we just got to talk about how do we all feel about Scream 5? Ross, you go first.
What is it, 2022 supposed to come out?
Yeah, directors of Ready or Not.
Okay, all right. Well, I like that movie. Actually, they do have kind of similar. I mean, the movies definitely do have similar tones. So
a little bit. I'm just worried that it won't have the Wes Craven touch.
Right.
Really. Wes Craven is great, and he puts he puts themes in the movie that you might not even think about, like the first time you watch it. But like, I love seeing him talk about his movies, because he is so interesting to see, like, what, even if it's not his greatest movie, he always has like something awesome to say, or like something he was trying to say about like society or family or anything. And it's really cool even when he doesn't write the movie, it seems to be that way. What were you saying? I'm sorry.
Oh, Scream 5. How do you feel about it?
At first I did not care at all. I was just like they not do it, just leave it alone, because Wes Craven is like gone. But the idea that all the cast is back pulls me in a little bit, but
right, like they kind of give you their blessing almost.
I am reading like the plot description. I'm worried about like this will be like the seventh or eighth killer that's after Sydney, and I feel like at Scream 5, 10 years later after Scream 4, I feel like you have to throw away like talking about the state of horror movies now, or like commenting on that. You have to address what people want from a Scream movie. And the things people expect from a Scream movie, and sort of turn that on its head instead of like the horror genre in general.
You kind of have to reinvent it again almost.
There is a structure that every Scream sort of follows. I feel like you have to change that, and people will hate that. People will hate that just because it's different. They're not going to like it. But I feel like to make something fresh and new, that's something you have to address or think about when you're making a new Scream movie.
Yeah, not to go on for too much longer, but like, just I've our theory that I've heard, because someone was like, "Why would Sydney come back to?"
Yeah, I said that.
Yeah, but I guess like there's a lot of theory that someone has is that someone from the main cast gets killed, and that's why she comes back.
That's the only reason anyone would come back to. If someone she loves gets killed in Woodsboro, I could see her coming back to try to figure that out.
And I could see it being Courtney Cox.
Oh shit!
Because Damn. Courtney Cox
has a new show on FX called Dirt.
That's old as hell.
I know, that's the joke. Back in like 2009.
she doesn't really do a lot now, and I feel like she would take a good paycheck just to show up in this movie for 10 minutes or whatever.
Dewey doesn't have anything to do in Scream 4.
But killing Dewey would bring everybody back, because who doesn't love Dewey?
Yeah. And he's almost gotten it like every single time. Yeah. Every single time. In the first Scream, they didn't have that shot of him being like wheeled into the ambulance. He tested really well, so like I guess they like shot that just in case they wanted to bring him back.
How can you not love Dewey? All right.
Well, see, this is another part that I get confused with Scary Movie. At the end, he's the killer.
You know? Jesus. God.
Oh, I met that guy. Oh, I can't talk about it. I want
to talk about it. Yeah. What's his name?
Dave Sheridan.
Dave Sheridan, yeah.
The guy who plays Doofy?
Yeah.
Ross has met, Sean's met some cool people. But, Sean, I tell you, Sean is a cool guy. Sean rules.
But, okay, so if we did a Scary Movie episode, would you go on that Scary Movie episode?
I haven't seen that movie in so long. I think I'd have something to say about Scary Movie.
Yeah, because we invite people on even if they don't like them. Like, you can come on and not like a movie. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep you in mind. But
also, I guess Justin's story about meeting Matthew Lillard is so bad that he would not even show up on this episode.
Well, we'll have to try to, Ross, you'll have to try to get that out of him at some point.
Oh, do you know Matthew Lillard is in Scream 2?
Really?
Yeah, he's in the background, kind of out of focus, but he has like blonde hair in it, at a party scene at one of the sororities.
Wow. What? How much of a...
He was dating Neve Campbell.
How much of a twist would it be if Stu was back for 5?
That's what Kevin Williamson wanted to do for Scream 3.
That could actually be kind of awesome.
Because you know that show he did, The Following?
Yes.
He took so many ideas he had for Scream 3 and applied it to The Following. How like Stu was going to be like controlling this group of like killers from prison.
What happened to Stu at the end? He was bleeding out.
He got a TV drop.
Oh, on
his head. Yeah. Yep.
So it would have been kind of ridiculous, but you know.
Yeah. Ross, real quick, Kevin Williamson thing. You love the movie Teaching Mrs. Tingle.
One of my favorites.
Kevin Williamson directed that and wrote it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you love that movie.
I love that movie.
But, they have to change the title after Columbine happened. Because it was called, and change the ending too. Because she didn't survive in the original script. But they were like,
What was the original title?
Killing Mrs. Tingle.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I could see how that'd be a little. But so we end every episode when we're talking about a specific actor. Do we do it at the end of every episode? Yes, we do.
Yeah, every episode.
It's been so long, I'm so rusty. All right, so was Matthew Lillard good in this movie? Ross?
I mean, he's great. I mean, from him going from Serial Mom to this, it's almost
fantastic.
The character is very similar, but I think having Wes Craven as his guide, I think really opened him up.
Plus, it also makes you watch Serial Mom, which like he's literally this horror obsessed teen. It's pretty obvious how that might have led to Scream. Like they could see it and be like,
oh yeah,
this guy's perfect for Scream. Sean, I'm assuming you think Matthew Lillard was good in this movie.
Yeah, he's awesome. I've watched like so many Scream documentaries, and I don't remember them talking about it considering anyone else for the Stu role. Like everyone else, like, they have like other people they talk about how they were in the running, but I feel like Matthew Lillard was always Stu.
I will say though, his face doesn't look as weird in this one.
I mean, we talked about his face in Serial Mom. Yeah, he's got, like Sean kind of said, he's got like that elastic, like his face always kind of looks like it's melting. Like, I'm not saying he's not a handsome dude, but like I feel like as he's gotten older, it's like tightened up.
But in Serial Mom, his face almost looks plastic or metal because it's so smooth.
Yeah.
And in this one, it actually does have some kind of like character.
maybe you got some work done. All right, second question. Was this movie good for Matthew Lillard? I mean,
100%.
I mean, I feel like he wouldn't have had the career he did if he wasn't in Scream.
Absolutely, it was. I feel like all those 90s movies had like the same casting director, because with Scooby-Doo, he's in Scooby-Doo. Sarah Michelle Gellar's in that. She's in Scream 2, and I Know What You Did Last Summer. And Freddie Prinze Jr. is also in I Know What You Did Last Summer. Like, a lot of those teen movies, like, share a lot of the same cast members.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, this is definitely good for him. All right, and then...
And then Scooby-Doo was in... What movie was Scooby-Doo in?
Yeah, Scooby-Doo was actually in... he was in Cherry Falls and the Wild Things. But, you remember that, the pool scene, you know? Scooby-Doo is like, we're raking out. But, all right, so I'm assuming we all bowed down to the Lizard King.
Oh, yeah.
We did, yes. Especially during this movie. Just what a performance. Matthew Lillard. I'm so happy we get to cover him. But, yeah, it's been a fantastic episode. Probably maybe our longest episode, which is incredible.
It's hard to know how long it's been going because I don't have the clock. But.
But it wouldn't have been possible without a fantastic guest. So thank you for joining us, Sean.
No problem.
And we hope to have you on again sometime soon in the future.
Yeah.
All right, so... Like you said, we'll link it in the show notes. I'll have Sean send me all the information. Ruby Red Productions. You are watching rubyred.com.
Sean, what's your socials?
Yes. Sean Dion on Twitter. On Instagram. I forgot what my... It might be the same thing on Twitter.
Things. We'll link those as well. You also have we'll link your photography account too, because Sean is also a great photographer.
The photography one is Sean Kelly 35 on Instagram.
He shoots pictures with actual film, and he actually has them like developed, and they look incredible. But trust me, if you love Scream, watch Sean's shorts. We're going to link all of them in the show notes. Like I said, my favorite is Blood Moon. Blood Moon rules. And I feel like pretty soon in the future, we're going to hear about Sean a lot more because he is very talented.
Any festivals, Sean?
What?
Have you been in any festivals?
No, not yet. I don't know. No, I haven't yet.
Someday it's coming.
But you're planning to.
Yeah.
I'll make sure he does. I'm going to become his agent. But, and then follow us on the normal, whatever.
You know where to find us.
Yeah, you know us losers.
Twitter.com/notnewmovie, patreon.com/notnewmovie.
And if you have any information on the man who punched Rick Moranis, let us know so we can punch him.
Yes, we have been assigned the Rick Moranis task case. Force.
Yeah.
We do not put out any official statements. We're kind of a backdoor agency.
I just know we will find him and we will punch him in the face.
And I assume your Chappie bounty is still up for grabs.
Oh, yes. Just, Sean, we have this ongoing thing because it is a known documented fact that Chappie is in Ready Player One. But I cannot find it on the goddamn internet. So I have a bounty. I think it's up to $50. I will Venmo you $50 if you can send me photo evidence of Chappie in Ready Player One. This goes to everybody.
Just call Steven Spielberg and ask him.
We've tried. It's always busy.
Yeah. What's he? It's, I don't know what the guy's doing.